Now, back to Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
6:49 on The Beacon on this Monday morning. Cinco de Mayo, Steve Efron. Steve, are you president of EFCO Products?
Yes, president. CEO.
President.
Thanks.
Come in just a little. There you go. So, Steve Efron, president of EFCO Products. Thanks for coming in. You and I have had, have we had on-air conversations once before? Or was it?
Yes.
Yeah,
with Harold King from the Council of
Ministry. That's what I thought. And then, of course, you and I have had a number of off-air conversations over the years, and I think we first met when you were on the Workforce Investment Board, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You taught me a lot.
EFCO Products, Efron family, when was it originally founded?
So my great-grandfather founded the business in 1903. He set up a small storefront on 468 Main Street that sold supplies not only to bakeries, but also animal feed as well. So.
And just and I believe when we've had these conversations with Harold, EFCO Products has been a very long-time member of the Council of Industry.
We have, and in fact, it was my father who was president of the council who helped recruit Harold King. And,
that's right.
They've had a really nice relationship through the years, and the council's been wonderful, and it's we very much appreciate their advocacy and support of manufacturing.
I've always enjoyed my conversations limited with your dad, Jack Efron, and of course, he was the one who came up with the phrase, I believe, and I don't know if I have this correctly, you guys make the go-zinsits.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. He still comes in every morning. Going to be 92 in November, and I've got a report to him each morning, which is great. And,
okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty special indeed. I last had an extended conversation with your dad. It's got to be a year ago already. We were out at the Dutch County Airport, Dutch County Regional Airport. We were out there at the, looking at the Placid Lassie, the C-47, when it was being prepped for its trip over to Europe for the anniversary of the Normandy invasions, and that being one of the only remaining original C-47s. So your dad, he was a pilot, right?
Correct. Yeah, he started flying when he was about 19 years old, and flew single and twin engine aircraft. In fact, he had a vintage 1930s Ryan, a open cockpit airplane.
Wow.
That he had with a partner of his, Jim Klein, for many years. So he loves aviation, and he got a big kick out of he flew in the C-47 on July 4th. They buzzed the Hudson River over the Tappan Zee Bridge and down to the Bergen County fireworks, and that was a big thrill for him.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I can well imagine. Of course, then your uncle Ira.
Correct.
Yeah. Involved in the business.
Yeah, and it's funny because when I first came back to the business full-time, it was Ira that asked me to come back in. I had been working outside the business for Hershey Foods for a number of years, and so really it was funny because when I was out with customers, I'd be more with Ira than with my dad, who's
yes.
more internal. But yes, they're great. They did so much for our business in the third generation, and still he's down in Florida, but speak to him weekly. And have to give him an update as well. And he really serves as a wonderful advisor. So.
I had a great conversation with Uncle Ira a number of years ago. Of course, where you guys are up there on Smith Street, Oakley Avenue, Cottage Street. And Ira and I were talking about the Cottage Street Rail Yard in there that when the Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey Circus came in and unloaded in that Cottage Street Rail Yard, and then the trucks and the elephants pulled the wagons out Smith Street, out Salt Point Turnpike, and out where Taylor Manufacturing is set up now, and they set up the Big Top.
Yeah, that's it's amazing to think that that happened right in the area where we are, and you know it was a nice section of industry in that area. It waned a little bit. We remained, but it's really it's wonderful to see the vibrancy in the area.
It really is. I mean, your next door neighbor there with Dorsey Metrology, the Ludi family, and across the street, Aaron Phipps was with me a week and a half ago, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, MPI. And it's, you know, it's not that far down around
Steve Pomeroy.
Corner. Yeah, with Schatz Bearing. Yeah. Really important stuff. And then I mentioned Taylor Manufacturing. Just, you know, take that short trip out on Salt Point Turnpike. And, all of you guys, all of you are involved with international trade.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And some of the neighbors, even more of their business is international. We've got a good segment, but mm-hmm. some of the neighbors at one point, I haven't spoken to recently, you know, 3/4 of their business was international.
Yeah. And that's what Aaron Phipps had said about the MPI. They can vary depending on what orders come in, anywhere from 40% to 80% of their business. Yeah. Can be international, and so dealing with the trade policies, with tariffs, with cost of labor, monetary exchange rates, things that make you keep you awake at night.
Oh, no doubt, and it's been a very precarious period. I think the one thing that would help is predictability, which we don't have right now. But certainly, you know, we have long-term relationships both on the purchase side. We're importing a lot of goods and then exporting. And I think, when you shake it up and probably some of these things needed to be changed, but when you do it in a vicious manner like this, it can certainly cause chaos. And in particular, I mean, these are jobs that we're talking about, right?
Yes.
So, and you know, these are we're making things to be exported. We want to be competitive as an American exporter. I think we have to be best in food quality, especially. People buy American goods because of the confidence in the food safety, but also the quality of the products themselves. I think the challenge right now is trying to understand what the strategy is on our end, and then adapting a game plan so that we can be successful. And you know, there is a fragility to American manufacturing and to workforce as well. So
yes.
We've got to be, and to the American consumer. I think the American consumer certainly told us that they couldn't live with the level of inflation that we had. But yet, you know, sometimes if you make certain changes, the worst thing probably, you know this better than me, would be something where we would end in a stagflation, which, mm-hmm. you know, is probably an outcome that could occur if this isn't managed properly.
Well, I made it through the 1970s. I started in business with my dad in 1970. And the first year I was in business, there had been the 1969 stock market crash, which we never talk about. Insurance company reserves were so depleted that I went through that first year in business with my dad. Our insurance carriers were not allowed to take on new risk because their reserves had been depleted. And it was welcome to the business world. We came out of that in, 71, 72, things started to recover, only to be turned around and slammed by the first OPEC energy mm-hmm. issues in 73, 74. We had a number of contractors who were our insureds, whose businesses, you know, their development projects, construction projects, were just shut down. And so I've come to the point where, you know, I try to be aware of this and just take it as I hate to say it, but a normal course of business. And not to be allow myself to be crippled and inactive by fear. You know, going back to the 1990s, that was right when the other day on April 29th was the 35th anniversary when my dad had passed away, and we had worked every day. It was a real shock mm-hmm. to me. But that's actually how I got involved, was starting to get involved with the chambers of commerce, the economic development. I needed to do something mm-hmm. different. And it turned out that it was an important time to get involved. And, of course, March of 93, I led the county's very first economic development forum, a strategic direction conference. Problem on our hands. Let's not be crippled. Let's work together. And Steve Efron, and that's why, as disruptive as things are right now, I am absolutely confident in the American people.
Well, and it's wonderful, Tom, to have, you know, your background and history. And, you know, I think about how difficult it can be going through. I can't imagine managing through those periods, but it's, you know, you learned from it, got better, and obviously are now sharing that.
And from that, one of the Steve Efron was understanding what people go through based mm-hmm. on what I had gone through. Let's care for each other in the community. Steve Efron, president of EFCO Products, going to be back in a minute on Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon. 7:06 on Hudson Valley Focus on the Beacon. Steve Efron, president of EFCO Products, in studio with me. And 1903, you said?
That's correct.
1903. And here you are. Steve Efron, in terms of the tariff situation, uncertainty in business, you know, making capital investments that businesses have to do, you know, requires being able to look ahead with some degree of certainty. So that's a huge factor. And for EFCO Products, you're on both sides of this transaction. You have to source and import your raw ingredients to go into the types of products that you then turn into finished products that then go out to people in the big. What industries do you serve?
So we serve a number of industries. The our largest segment is food service.
Uh-huh.
So we're doing a lot with quick serve restaurant chains. We're doing a lot with industrial bakeries that sell to both in-store supermarket bakeries as well as commercial bakery aisle, think bread aisle,
uh-huh.
and center of the store consumer goods that use our ingredients. We also sell a lot into traditional bakeries through distributors and some other business and industry, as well as other segments of food service.
And so you sourcing those ingredients, again, the cost of those ingredients, and you need to be able to enter into contracts with those people you're doing business with, and they want some certainty on the pricing. Well, all of a sudden, you've got unknowns right. in that spreadsheet.
Absolutely. We primarily are using United States imports, mm-hmm. but certain fruits, for example, are not grown in the United States.
Right.
So we've had very, very long relationships with certain fruit suppliers in Central America, in Asia, for example. And those are, you know, obviously have been, we've been watching U.S. negotiations with those countries very
yes.
quickly. The other thing that's happened is that a lot of the food chemicals, many unique to Europe, but there has been over time, Chinese. We don't buy a lot of Chinese ingredients, but yes. the fact is China has dominated in some of those markets, and they are the only option in certain cases.
And so that would bring the conversation around to the conversation now about the dyes and ingredients that are in foods. So from your standpoint, for EFCO Products, you have food researchers, I believe, from conversations we've had in the past, who are keeping up with all these things.
Yeah, it's funny because if you think about the change from artificial food dyes, we've been doing this for almost 25 years. Europe is way ahead of the United States, Asia. Most of our larger restaurant customers have already eliminated the artificial mm-hmm. dyes. We've gone to natural dyes. And we basically, we're doing a lot of customization and staying ahead of things. So whether it's food dye, other ingredients, this, current, food and drug secretary, this is a game that's changing at a much faster pace than what we've seen before.
Yes.
And, you know, some of it not so science-based, so we've got to be thoughtful. But with that being said, We're going to abide by the law. Our customers will, we'll work with our customers to find solutions. But we've eliminated the artificial dyes in many cases with our
customers. There was a story the other day, Steve, after I was looking at it, and someone was criticizing it. Well, they haven't made these things mandatory in certain sectors yet. I'm okay with that. And the reason I'm okay with that is that you can't pull the rug out from under something immediately. It takes months, sometimes years, to realign a supply chain.
Right. Yeah.
And to be disruptive, many of the businesses that are in those supply chains, they're not mega corporations.
Correct.
They're the smaller businesses, many of them family-owned businesses, as yours is. And to make that change overnight would risk putting thousands of people out of work.
Absolutely. The other thing, and I this really sticks with me, there was a female consumer in Colorado many years ago, and one of the cereal companies had introduced a natural food dyed cereal, and the price was much higher. The vividity of the color wasn't in good,
right.
as good. And she said, I didn't ask for this. So I think we've got to be thoughtful as to where the real risk is. Certainly, we know that over time this is occurring, but the replacement of artificial dyes with natural ones is very inflationary, and it doesn't, A, give the vividity, but B, it's inflationary, and we certainly have seen 2024 was an example where the U.S. consumer and international consumer probably earlier said, enough is enough. We can't continue to take price hikes at the rate that we've seen
yes.
them. And, they're reducing spend. So I think we've got to be thoughtful as to the prioritization and the level of inflation that, that consumers can handle.
One thing that one of the inputs, your cost of energy has to be a big factor.
Oh, huge. We're a big consumer of electricity. Our biggest spend is we make our fillings and beverage bases. We generate steam, and that steam is natural gas.
Yes.
So the energy costs have been, and New York State's done a horrific job in terms of energy generation. The legislators will get up and tell you that we've worked with the local utility, and mm-hmm. they're making your bill more accurate. But what they won't tell you is how much energy production has been taken offline.
Yes.
And how devastating that is to manufacturers, to consumers. So we're energy influenced. The other thing that along with that is inflationary to us is with some of the biofuel mandates, for example, with the use of corn and soybeans not for food supply.
That's a double whammy to you.
That's been incredibly inflationary. And so we saw a year like 2022 in which our soybean oil costs soared. And that was a reflection of a number of things, but in particular, the soybeans and refining capacity being moved towards the production of energy
yes.
rather than food.
Yes, and that was so severe when we take that back to 2007, 2008, 2009, after the introduction of the 2007 Energy Independence Security Act, which I love how these things are always named. It set required mandates for production. It actually then drove up the cost of food supplies as ethanol producers, especially in a year where there was a drought in the Midwest. They actually had to go into the market and start buying corn and soybeans in order to meet a rigid government mandate rather than the government responding and saying to market conditions.
Right.
All factors in involved here. Coming up on 7:15 on Hudson Valley Focus Live, Steve Efron, president of EFCO Products. In studio with me, Tony Marmo, Norman Staffing will be joining us after this break. But first, let's hear from the Zolls with some help with our friends at Atlas Star. And then back in a minute.